Well, hope you had a wonderful Columbus Day. The banks were closed. The post office was closed. Everything else was just about open, even most offices and businesses. You know, 1492, pretty interesting year. That's when Columbus apparently discovered North America, right? Or did he? In a moment, Gavin Menzies joins me again. He's back. It's been about a couple of years. We talked with him last about the lost empire of Atlantis. We're going to get into, of course, who discovered America next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gavin Menzies with us, of course, and we will be bringing him on. He's the New York Times best-selling author of 1421. I'm not going to give you the subtitle yet because we're going to talk about that. And here he is back. Gavin, always a pleasure. How are you?
Well, George, thank you very much for asking me back. It's wonderful. After this is the third time you've kindly invited me to your show, and I've enjoyed the other two greatly. So thank you so much.
You are well worth it, my friend. And interesting time to have you on today, of course, being Columbus Day here.
Yes.
And lots of folks are at odds whether he discovered America or not. But you've done a lot of research. Now, when we talked about 1421, and that was, of course, I might as well tell the subtitle, the year China discovered America.
Yes.
You don't think that Columbus did? Tell me about this.
Well, Columbus certainly did not discover America. He's a very clever man, very able person, wonderful seaman, but he sailed from Spain with a map which showed him the way to the Americas, the islands he'd find en route. And the map was a copy of a Chinese world map which the Emperor of China gave to the Pope in 1434 when a Chinese fleet visited Venice. And the Pope, in his turn, gave the map to Christopher Columbus. And we know that Christopher Columbus received it because after his death, it was found, together with a letter from the Pope's representative, in Columbus' effects. So he definitely had it. And he showed it to his fellow captain in the Pinta when they thought they were lost crossing the Atlantic. So, no, he didn't discover America, Columbus. He was 3,500 years late at the least. He was going to America as viceroy for the Spanish King Ferdinand. So he knew where he was going. He had a map. And he knew what he was to do when he got there. He wasn't discovering anything. He was to administer the Americas, as we now call them, on behalf of the King of Spain.
Gavin, if the Chinese got here first, why didn't we see this ownership of the lands here? I mean, would they pop in and pop out? What happened?
Well, the Chinese had a different system to the Europeans. Chinese were principally interested in trade, and they were also very self-confident, you might almost say arrogant. They thought the whole world would flock to trade with China because China had the finest silk and the finest porcelain. And so there was no need for them to leave garrisons when they left the country to sail home to China again. They thought that when they returned a few years later, the native people or indigenous people would flock to buy their silk and porcelain. And really, that's what happened. Whereas the Portuguese, who were the first European explorers across the world, they thought that the local people would round on them and kill them. So they built fortresses everywhere they visited. And so it's just a completely different attitude to exploration.
You know, a lot of people still accept the fact that Columbus discovered America. How come they don't back off of that?
Well, I think it's a very charming story. It's a fairy story, really. I think when people have got a vested interest, it takes a lot to get people to change their mind.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
Put it this way, if you've spent your life teaching Columbus discovered America and he went this side or that side of a certain sandbank, and then somebody comes along and says, well, this is all fairy story, really. He didn't discover anything. He was at least 2,500 years late, possibly more. You'd understandably be upset. I mean, one's career is based on a fairy story.
Plus, we used to sing a great song about Columbus discovering a long time ago when we were kids.
All right.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. Well, maybe he did in that time period, but he was late, right?
Yes, yes. What he did was, which was very valuable to the Europeans, he pioneered the art of sailing the Atlantic with the prevailing winds and currents. So before Columbus, people would set off from Spain or Portugal on their voyages of discovery, sailing into the wind, so that if they ran out of food or water, they could turn around and they could get home quickly.
Yeah.
The wind was behind them. Columbus did exactly the opposite. He sailed with the wind behind him from Spain and Portugal. So, for example, on his 1492 voyage, about 3 weeks out, his sailors realized perfectly well that they're getting very short of food and water, and they'd been sailing with the wind behind them. So if they had to turn around and go back, it would take them longer than it would take them sailing with the wind.
They'd never make it in time, would they?
Exactly. So exactly that. So there was a very nearly a mutiny in Columbus's ships, and he solved it by getting them all on the upper deck and telling them that they weren't to worry, because he had a map which he'd received from the King of Portugal. And the map showed the way, and they would shortly see the islands which appeared on this map, which was the islands in the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. And they believed him, and on they went, and the rest is history. So he provided this extraordinarily valuable information which enabled Portuguese and Spanish ships over the centuries to sail from Spain and Portugal to America with the wind and with the current, and then sail back again, still with the wind and with the current, because the prevailing wind changes direction. So when you get to America, the current and the wind will take you back to Europe. So that was absolutely inestimable value to later voyages of exploration. So well done, Columbus, for finding that out.
But what did the Chinese leave behind, Gavin? Anything?
Well,
what kind of proof?
They left all sorts of things. Most important of all, they left their genes. Now, in the last 15 years, there's been huge advances in DNA genetics research. So you can see in a person's genes who their ancestors were. And really, all over the coast of America, both the Pacific coast and the North Atlantic and South Atlantic coast, today, the local people have Southeast Asian or Chinese DNA in their genes. So you can say for absolute categoric certainty that they settled there.
You know, and when you went through your research for this, and this book here that we're talking about, Who Discovered America, you wrote with Ian Hudson.
Yeah.
Any surprises for you two?
There were lots of surprises, yes. I mean, it's a progression, really. My first book, 1421, which you kindly mentioned, was really about Chinese in the year 1421 sailing from China on world voyages of exploration in a massive fleet of huge ships and mapping the world after they came back. Well, when that book was published, my publishers of 1421, that's Random House, said, look, you must set up a website to collect the evidence which will flow in from people who have read your book. So we did just that, www.gavinmenzies.net.
I've got that linked up for you, too.
Have you? Thank you very much, George. So the people who came to the website, by and large, about 99% of the people who emailed us said, and we've had hundreds of thousands of emails, people said, well, yes, okay, the Chinese did sail the world in 1421, but you've told a simplified story, because they actually had been mapping the world and sailing across the oceans long, long before that. And moreover, they also went to Europe, which I hadn't mentioned in 1421.
Okay.
So my second book, 1434, was really a collation of all the emails which run into hundreds of thousands by now, that we received. And it was about previous voyages from China to the Americas. So that was my second book. Well, we published that, and then again, people came forward and said, well, You know, you've once again been simplistic. Okay, they have been sailing backwards and forwards between China and the Americas for a long time, but so have other people. So by complete chance on holiday, I hit on the fact that the Minoans, who are a seafaring people based in the Eastern Mediterranean, back in 3000 BC, that's 5,000 years ago.
Wow, long time.
Had sailed from the Eastern Mediterranean across the Atlantic to the Americas. And they'd founded an empire, Bronze Age empire, based on combining copper with tin to make bronze. And they've used this bronze for weapons, offensive and defensive weapons, and also for jewelry and utensils for cooking and for farming and hunting and so on. So they created a Bronze Age empire which stretched from the Eastern Mediterranean all the way across the Atlantic to North America. And they built up their wealth by exploiting the Great Lakes mines of copper in North America. Well, that research, which we had tremendous amount of help from all the subscribers on our website, which ran into the thousands by then, that was very interesting, and it showed that there were educated, sophisticated people living in the Americas in 3000 BC. And that book was my third book, which was called The Lost Empire of Atlantis. History is great.
And that was dramatic all by itself.
And that book, George, brought in another huge amount of information from people saying, well, once again, what you've said is true, factually correct, but you've only scraped the surface. People have been sailing from Europe to the Americas for a long, long time. And why don't you write a book about that? So we started researching, and we had help from all across the world from hundreds of people. And that research has shown that there have been constant voyages to America from 40,000 BC, from the East, from Asia, and from the Eastern Mediterranean.
Did you say 40,000?
40,000 years, and that's shown up in the Pedro Ferrada case and other cases. And we've, in my book, Who Discovered America, which we're now discussing, there is a section of color plates in the middle which show the sophisticated artwork of these people 40,000 years ago.
What kind of ships might they have had then? This is older than the pyramids.
Yes, much older than the pyramids. Well, the first thing which came as a great surprise to me, although I was a sailor, was that the currents, in the front of my book, Who Discovered America, there is a map of the world which shows the ocean currents of the world. And I found with Ian Hudson, we both found that it was quite possible and fairly straightforward to sail from Southeast Asia direct to the Americas with the currents. So just as Columbus had discovered the currents in the Atlantic, much, much earlier sailors had discovered the currents which could carry ships, fairly primitive and simple ships, from Southeast Asia and China all the way to the Americas. That came as a great surprise, and it explained to me a lot of things, just how multiple voyages from Asia had deposited the peoples in North and South America, principally in South America, over the millennia.
Were there any, 40,000 years ago, were there any indigenous people on our continent?
Yes, there were all over the place, very sophisticated people. Now, to give you an example, much more recently than 40,000 years, but about 9,000 years ago, there was a cemetery in a bog in Florida. And in the last few years, the skeleton, there are 120-something skeletons in this bog. And they have been, some of them have been brought to the surface, and their bones have been dated, and they are between 7,000 and 9,000 years old. Now, the interesting thing is that the DNA of these peoples has shown that they came from Eastern Mediterranean. So they were Europeans. and that they were very caring people. For example, some of the skeletons had deformities, which meant that the people, whilst they were alive, couldn't possibly walk, yet they were looked after all their lives until they died a natural death. And children were buried with their toys and so on. So they were very caring, considerate people who lived in a settled community in Florida.
And very docile, you would think?
Sorry?
Docile? Very laid-back kinds
so.
Of people?
In their graves, there were no weapons. There was lots of artistic pieces of cloth, beautifully woven and so on.
Now, did the Chinese, Gavin, bring anything back to Asia?
Yes, they brought a huge amount of fruit and vegetables indigenous to the Americas. They brought it back to Asia and the places they stopped on the way back. Now, how do we know this? Well, far cleverer people than I have spent a lifetime researching this, and two of them, Emeritus Professor John Sorensen and Emeritus Professor Carl Johannesson, have written books listing out all the crops which were indigenous to the Americas and were found before Columbus in Southeast Asia. And how many voyages do you think that threw up?
Probably just you mean in terms of supplies back and forth?
Exactly. There were no less than 6,000 voyages before Columbus.
6,000 voyages?
6,000 between the Americas and Asia, bringing back all sorts of fruit, vegetables.
That's amazing.
Plants. It is. It's absolutely astounding.
Well, Columbus is turning over in his grave right now, Gavin.
Who?
Columbus is turning over in his grave right now.
Well, I don't know, George, because Columbus was a very, very clever man. And he never actually, as far as I can see anyway, he never really claimed to have discovered anything. What happened was he had very detailed instructions how to treat the local people when he got to America as Viceroy of King Ferdinand. And his enemies alleged that he had cruelly mistreated the American people.
And that's not true.
Well, he was relieved of his command because of that.
Ah.
So the King of Spain said, come home and you're going to be court-martialed. And Columbus said, well, I've done nothing wrong. So a huge, complicated lawsuit started, and it went on for 60 years before it petered out. And Columbus' family fought the Spanish crown, arguing that Columbus should be honored and he should be allowed to keep his wealth, which he'd accrued in the Americas. And the king of Spain, Ferdinand, to start with, said, this is incorrect. You've mistreated the natives and you've stolen property to which you weren't entitled. So this went on and on and on, and then it finally petered out. So he was never actually convicted of anything, any wrongdoing at all.
But he was shunned back in Spain, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but he created all sorts of legacies for us who followed him.
At what point, though, Gavin, did, and we're going to come up to a break pretty soon, but at what point did the Chinese stop coming here?
After the 1421 voyages, which entailed a huge Chinese fleet, the country was virtually bankrupt, because at the same time as building this vast fleet of over 4,000 ships, the emperor had embarked on a huge undertaking to build a new city in the north, that's the Forbidden City, to rebuild the Great Wall and build the Temple of Heaven and so on. And he denuded China of trees, so he sent his eunuchs into Vietnam to pillage the forests. And the Vietnamese fought very skillfully in the jungle and the forests, and they actually tied up huge Chinese armies. So China had her Vietnam.
Well, we should have known just by looking at that history, Gavin. Maybe we should have stayed out of Vietnam. Stay with us. Coming back in a moment with you, Who Discovered America on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're with Gavin Menzies. Of course, he also wrote the book, The Lost Empire of Atlantis. We'll talk with him about that again in a moment or two. We're talking about Who Discovered America. Gavin, there's no question, though, that Christopher Columbus and company colonized the Americas, unlike the Chinese. So at what point did the Chinese drop the ball here?
Well, they overextended, the emperor overextended China. He built an enormous fleet of 4,000 ships between 1405 and 1419. He sent these ships all across the world, and they returned in the early 1420s. And when they got back to China, they found the country in turmoil. So the ships were paid off, the crews were released, and the ships were mothballed, and all designs for building further ships were ordered to be burned.
Ah.
And the reason they did that was that basically the emperor had overextended China, and he'd reduced the poor farmers to eating grass. They're in a really desperate state.
Not smart, was it?
No, it wasn't. So China turned in on itself in the 1420s, and by 1449, paranoia had taken over, and trading with foreigners was forbidden. Anyone who traded with foreigners after 1449 was condemned to death. So the colonies or settlements which China had created in the Americas over millennia were virtually abandoned. China withdrew into its shell and stayed inside its shell for 600 years until about 20 years ago, when the hierarchy of China decided that it was more sensible to become part of the world order and trade across the world than to live in permanent isolation. So it had a huge impact, this failure of economic policy in the 1420s.
And the colonization then that was done after Columbus came here, primarily by the Spaniards?
Yes. I would say Spanish, Portuguese, and peoples from the Eastern Mediterranean. Yes, you're right. Really, it was principally Spanish and Portuguese, but before that, it was much more cosmopolitan. And since the earliest known settlement in the Americas is 40,000 BC, from then on until Columbus, there were wave after wave of settlements in South and North America, created by people coming largely from Southeast Asia with the currents, but to a lesser extent, from the Eastern Mediterranean.
What exciting work that you were doing, Gavin, trying to find all this and discover this. Now, tell me a little bit more about the map that Columbus had.
Well, how do we know Columbus had a map? Because he said so. So there's no argument about that. There has been substantial argument over what the map showed. And I say that it showed the whole world. And the map, which was actually produced in 1418, shows the Americas quite distinctly. There's no argument about it, really. Now, various historians have claimed the map's a forgery. Basically, they say that I forged it together with the owner of the map, which is a Chinese lawyer called Liu Gang.
That you forged it?
That's the claim, that it's a fake and I forged it. And they say that they gave the evidence for claiming that there were names on the map in Chinese, in a Chinese idiom that was not in use when the map was published in 1418. For example, they said that simplified characters were shown on the 1418 map, but simplified characters weren't used until Mao Zedong came along much, much later in the early 1940s.
Gavin, why would they accuse you of trying to forge a map, for crying out loud?
Because it validates everything I've argued in my books 1421 and 1434, that there was a world map produced by the Chinese. I was slightly out on dates, and I said it was by 1421. In fact, it appeared in 1418, but it doesn't really affect the overall argument. Now, the critics say that there were certain Chinese words which weren't in use in 1418. Therefore, the map's a forgery. Well, we've assembled a team of experts on early Chinese character writing. And they were right. There were words which were not in use by the Han Chinese in 1418. But China's a very large country, and it's virtually an empire of different peoples. And the characters and words which they said were not in use, in fact, were in use in the Yunnan province of China at that date. And furthermore, some of the words had alliterations and bastardizations, which showed that the chronographer, the person who produced the map, came from the east coast of China, a place called Qingdao.
There have been some reports that Egyptian-type hieroglyphs have been found in North America as well.
Yes.
One, could that be true? And two, do you think the Chinese may have brought that with them?
I think it's true. Sorensen and Johannesson mentioned this in their great bibliography. I think it's, yes, it is true. But I think there were Egyptian voyages to the Americas.
Okay.
Thousands of years ago.
Not before the Chinese, though.
Well, so far, the earliest DNA which has been found in the Americas, in other words, the earliest settlers,
right,
as you say, did come from Southeast Asia. But I wouldn't be in the slightest bit surprised if it doesn't, in the future, show up that actually people from the Middle East...
They came here, too, or earlier.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. That's a big discovery, too.
Well, the key to it all is DNA. DNA does not lie. It's the improvements to DNA techniques over the last 20 years have been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, very much so.
So you can say with complete certainty now, if a person has that sort of DNA, he came from that sort of place in Asia. And this is revolutionizing history, as simple as that.
This is a great history lesson, Gavin. This is something. So with all your research on this, tell me the impact that you think it has on us, on the knowledge of the past. What do you think is the big smoking gun here?
I think that we greatly underestimate the skills of the indigenous people of the Americas who came by sea over the last 40,000 to 100,000 years. They were sophisticated people, they were kind people, decent, tolerant people. They built the most remarkable civilizations. So the claim that everything changed after Columbus, he went there to tame the natives and so on, which in fact he never actually claimed himself, his followers did, is nonsense. When Columbus reached the Americas, there were lots and lots of highly skilled, highly developed civilizations living peaceably already there.
The impact, I think, of the things that they have done, did that impact into your work, The Lost Empire of Atlantis?
Yes, I was really surprised. To give a simple example, I went around all the museums I could think of in the Bronze that had Bronze Age artifacts, and I found to my astonishment that the design of razors to shave was exactly the same in Bronze Age India, in the Eastern Mediterranean, in Crete, in Santorini, in Egypt, and in the Americas. So you can find razors in the Great Lakes, which were produced during the Bronze Age 5,000 years ago, which are identical to the razors produced in Eastern Mediterranean of the same era.
What a remarkable discovery for you. I mean, just to be able to come across this and then, you know, it leads you in different directions, doesn't it?
It does, George, but again, I have been fantastically lucky. First of all, I and my team have come on the scene when DNA has had made these spectacular improvements. And the second thing, we come on the scene when the website, which really when I started my research in 15 years ago, was hardly known. But now we can have conversations and put up evidence. People come to our website, thousands of people a day at its peak, and bring new ideas and new evidence. So everything is continuously freshened up, as you might say, and improved upon. Now, 20 years ago, there were no websites, so
that's right.
Historians had a field day on their own. Now, we're all historians. We can all challenge the dogmas that we're taught. We can all challenge the fact that Columbus didn't discover America, and so on. So the website has been an enormously important tool. Now, how do we exploit it? Well, I'm quite sure we haven't, despite the efforts of my team, who I admire tremendously. We haven't, by a long chalk, worked out all the different ways that you can exploit the website to increase human knowledge, especially of history and exploration.
What do you do now, research-wise, these days, Gavin?
Well, I could spend an hour telling you about the emails we've had in the last few days, but essentially they come from from all over the world, on the most abstruse subjects you can think of. So there's one person who keeps emailing me about Tibetan language, about which I know nothing. And we're all learning about Tibetan and the impact of Tibet on Southeast Asia. Then there's a huge volume of evidence comes in continuously about the Chinese exploration of Australia and the legacies the Chinese left. And then there are equally bizarre claims by past historians about what happened. Well, one of the most important and interesting facets of this research, I think, is what Plato said and wrote. Now, Plato, as you know, is a famous philosopher.
That's right.
A historian long ago.
He knew something.
Sorry?
He knew something.
He did, yes, absolutely. He wrote a very, very lucid and accurate account of the destruction of Atlantis, which, in my book, I argue, Atlantis was in fact the Minoan Empire, which was destroyed by a huge volcanic eruption on the island of Santorini. Plato described that with the most amazing accuracy, and it fits. Plato's description, I found, fits perfectly with the Bible and the flight of the Israelites and so on. Now, what Plato went on to say was that man's civilizations have been continuously destroyed one after the other for a very, very long time. So Plato, in effect, says that we aren't only the product of devolution, Darwinism, but were the products of collapses of successive civilizations, which have left nothing behind. So civilization after civilization, according to Plato, came to grief and was destroyed, and so we had to start all over again. So if he's right, and I think he is, it's quite a challenge to Darwin, because Darwin claimed we're all the product of evolution. One civilization and one strain of humans gradually improved upon and left a legacy to the next, and so on. Plato argues that's not the case, that there were great civilizations thousands and thousands of years ago.
That's remarkable.
It is. I think that, to me, that's the most interesting thing that we came across. And so, over the years, we will do our best to continuously improve the website and bring up as much evidence as we can, put it on the website about what Plato claimed and what evidence there is.
Some groups, getting back to Columbus, could get very hot under the collar when you tell them that you believe the Chinese discovered the Americas first. How do you combat that? What do you say?
I don't. I never reply to
You don't confront, do you?
No, I never reply to critics at all. They're perfectly entitled to their views.
Sure.
Let the readers decide. Now, I can say with certainty that of the emails we received, in every 1,000 emails we received, there are 6 vitriolic emails saying that I'm a forger and charlatan and so on.
How
and
dare
nine,
you get?
994 in every 1,000, therefore, left, who in principle agree with, they say, well, there's so much evidence, it can't all be forged. If I was a forger, I would need an army of people to support me.
I think the one thing we can honestly say, too, is that this planet has gone through many different cultural changes and catastrophes where high levels of civilizations were wiped out when they probably had pretty good technology, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, well, on the technology side, there are several professors. Well, Professor Minas Tsikritsis has deciphered Minoan Linear A for the first time. And he can show that the Minoans had computers, they had batteries, they had they could use petroleum, they built 4-story houses with flushing toilets and hot and cold water systems. They produced beautiful jewelry. They had worked out how to use the golden number to calculate stress in buildings, and their artists, Leonardo da Vinci, for example, followed on using the golden number in his paintings and drawings. So they had advanced mathematics. They could calculate longitude. They had computers which would help them to do so, or enable them to do so. So Minoan seafarers had a computer which they could use to calculate longitude by having ephemeris tables giving the sequence of the moons.
Gavin, was there someone like Columbus on the Chinese end?
Yes, there was. There was an admiral, a eunuch admiral. His name was...
A eunuch admiral?
Eunuch, yes.
Poor admiral.
Yeah, well, it's sad, really, but this man, he's called Zheng He, Zheng He, and he came from a noble Persian family, and he was based in Yunnan, that's southwest of China, near the mountains. And he was engaged to his cousin, which was common in those days.
Let's talk a little bit more about him, Gavin, and some other things, Atlantis, and we'll take phone calls. Final hour just ahead on Coast to Coast AM.